So I'm going to be talking about Chinook salmon once again. The purpose of this talk, I was asked to summarize what we know about Chinook salmon in the Chehalis River, and I'm going to provide an overview both of what we know based on work that has been conducted as well as what we would like to know. Some of you may be wondering, why is there so much focus on Chinook salmon? Why is there so much discussion today about spring Chinook salmon? And so I'm providing you a little bit of background here. This plot here is simply the mean spawning escapement of each of the Pacific salmon and steelhead species over a 10-year period in the Chehalis River. You can see here that spring Chinook salmon are the least abundant, the lowest numbers. They are an important part of the diversity of the Chinook salmon in the basin. They're important for the fisheries. And so from a fishery perspective and a conservation perspective, spring Chinook salmon and their current status and whether we're estimating the numbers correctly is a really important issue to restoration. Chinook salmon are the most diverse of all Pacific salmon species. That's a fair statement. All Pacific salmon species spend part of their, spend part of their life in freshwater in the river, and then part of their life in the ocean. So all Pacific salmon species share that. Chinooks, what differs among them is how much time they spend in each of these environments. And Chinook salmon can have many, many different combinations of the amount of time that they spend in freshwater, the amount of time they spend in the estuary, and the number of years that they spend in the ocean. So biologists, people, we don't like to just talk about diversity, we want categories. And so when we talk about spring and fall Chinook salmon, that's what we're doing, is categorizing the species. So we can look at this time period right here, which is when the Chinook salmon are returning from the ocean to the river, that part of their life cycle. And that's what we're using to distinguish these two runs of fish, spring and fall Chinook salmon. So spring and fall Chinook salmon differ in terms of their freshwater entry period, spring Chinook coming in much earlier than fall Chinook. They differ in terms of the number of months they spend in the river prior to spawning. Spring Chinook salmon are in the river much longer prior to the time that they spawn. And in a river such as the Chehalis, which is quite warm, this is a big deal. How are they doing this, and what are the costs of coming in that early from the sea? And then finally, the two runs differ in the state of their maturity when they enter freshwater. Spring Chinook salmon have to mature reproductively in freshwater over the 3 to 7 months that they spend there. So I'm going to talk a little bit about several studies which have looked at the freshwater phase, both juvenile and adult, of Chinook salmon in the Chehalis River. And specifically, I'm going to provide a little some highlights of the work you just heard from Andrew Claiborne, and I'll ask, which was based on otolith microchemistry. I'll also talk about some migration timing information that we obtained using pit tags. This was a study that was led by John Winkowski and myself in the Chehalis River. So we know that the timing of migration to sea, we know that juvenile Chinook, whether they are fall or spring Chinook, are migrating primarily in their first year. We also know from the pit tagging work that this migration is mostly completed by August, and this has been supported by our additional smolt trapping efforts this past spring. Other pieces of information we know about this phase have to do with the contribution of freshwater conditions in the freshwater environment to that downstream migration. And as I mentioned, the Chehalis Basin as a whole is a very warm coastal watershed, and so one of the questions was how that temperature might interplay with the downstream migration. So in terms of freshwater conditions, Andrew just summarized for you that the spawning location affects the amount of time that juveniles, whether spring or fall Chinook, spend in freshwater. And so the populations that spawn higher in the watershed are disproportionately using that main stem corridor that we are talking about doing restoration in than populations that are closer to Grays Harbor. In addition, Andrew and Lance did not find that the overall temperature of the subbasin was correlated with the size at entry. So whether it's a warm or a cooler subbasin for freshwater rearing didn't appear to be a affecting how large the fish were when they got to the estuary. However, what John and I did find among individual days was that on warm days, juvenile Chinook par are moving. They're moving downstream, they're moving toward the ocean. On cooler days, they're not moving. So there is some interplay of the temperature of the basin and the timing of the movement of these juveniles downstream. Let's flip to the adult side now. And this is where spring and fall Chinook differ from each other in significant way, particularly in the when they return to the river. And so I'm going to focus here on the information that we learned on adult spring Chinook salmon, which was radio telemetry work that was led by Marty Leibke, who's a scientist with the U.S. Geological Survey. So we, through this study, we identified that there was really two pulses of upstream movement patterns. This is for spring Chinook. So I've switched to focusing on spring Chinook here. One pulse occurred at river entry between the months of March and June. And then the second pulse occurred as the spring Chinook were getting ready to spawn in September, October. We saw very limited movements in the months of July and August. These are the hottest months of the river, and the spring Chinook appear wherever they get to by the end of June. They're buckling down, and that is where they're staying until the flows come up, the temperatures go down, and they're ready to spawn. So the selection of those holding areas over the summer is really important, and the availability of these holding areas over the summer is really important to how well they do within the freshwater environment. We also identified through this radio telemetry study important summer holding areas, as I was mentioning, and that this occurs in multiple locations, both in the tributaries. Skookumchuck and Newaukum rivers are important, have important holding areas for spring Chinook, but also in the main stem river itself, near tributary confluences where cool water is coming into the main stem. And so by diversifying where they're holding, they're sort of the spring Chinook are hedging their bets in terms of let's not all go to one, the same place. The other thing that we observed during this time was that was pre-spawn mortality. And of course, in the Chehalis, which is quite warm, that was a question, the extent to which pre-spawn mortality was occurring, and identifying this as a very vulnerable stage for spring Chinook salmon in this river. However, all of the pre-spawn mortality that we observed was due to either predation, which looked to be otters or something with a good bite on the radio tag, and also harvest, which in the areas was taken was not legal, and yet it was still occurring, and these fish were being removed from the river. I will say that pre-spawn mortality due to temperature has been observed. There have been mass kills of spring Chinook salmon in the Chehalis River that were attributed to warm temperature, but also more recently a publication in the Willamette River identified temperature as an important factor in determining the pre-spawn mortality of spring Chinook in that river. In the Chehalis River, these spring Chinook are exposed to very high temperatures. So this is the range of internal body temperatures, and I apologize, I meant to fix this slide. That's 16 to 20 degrees Celsius was their was the range of internal temperatures that we observed, which is 61 to 72 degrees Fahrenheit. Just if you're trying to make that conversion. And to give you some perspective, that threshold where in the Willamette River they start to see pre-spawn mortality related to temperature is right around 20 degrees C. So certainly Celsius, we are certainly seeing spring Chinook exposed to those temperatures in the Chehalis. The other cost of this warm temperature is simply the amount of energy and amount of resources that the fish will have when they get to spawning. As the water temperature goes up, so does the metabolic cost of maintaining their body functions through that holding period in which they're not feeding, and they're basically depleting energy over that entire time. So the spawning distribution of spring Chinook has been a subject of much discussion among biologists that work in the basin. This is the current spawning distribution that we're using in the modeling of restoration within the Chehalis. You can see the Newaukum River here, Skookumchuck River here. That's where we see the highest spawning densities currently. as well as the South Fork Chehalis and the Upper Chehalis basins. However, I will say that spring Chinook are being documented either by their spawn timing or by their presence in the river in April, May, June, elsewhere in the basin. So for example, there's an early spawning timing in the main stem, and there are observations within the of both live fish early in the season as well as spawning in some of these other basins, Black River, Satsup, Wainuchi, and Hump Tulips. So what these fish are that we see in these other areas and how they are contributing to the entire population numbers is much of the discussion you're hearing amongst participants today. The other thing that's important to note about spawning distribution within the basin, which is not as common for Chinook salmon, is that you see fall Chinook here spawning in the same areas that the spring Chinook are spawning. So there is a high degree of spatial overlap in the areas that spring Chinook and fall Chinook are spawning within the basin, which certainly contributes to the amount that these species interact when it comes to gene exchange. This plot here shows some information on spawn timing. I simply pulled a single year. This is the 2015 spawning year, and took all of our index reach surveys and put them together to give you an idea of the kind of challenge that is faced by spawning ground survey crews in the field. And so this is the timing here of the spring Chinook spawning between early September and mid-October. And this is the spawn timing of fall Chinook starting sometime in early October and extending all the way into the mid-December. The challenge comes in this time period here, where it appears based on the condition of the fish that are spawning within the in the field that we have a mix of spring and fall Chinook spawners. But that also gets to the question of, are we identifying them correctly? And visual observations here are very challenging. We're using the condition of the fish, essentially, to help identify who's who during this period of overlap. One of the other important things about spawn timing of spring Chinook that I wanted to raise today is that based on the information we have, it appears that the spawn timing of spring Chinook has changed over time. And so this the spawn timing information we have available goes back to the 80s, which in the grand scheme of things isn't that long ago, but it is, we are talking about a 40-year period here, and we do see a pretty significant change. So this is data from one of our index reaches, the South Fork Newaukum River, which is a high density spawning area for spring Chinook. And if we just use a reference of date here of September 21st, you can see in the 80s there was a notable amount of spawning which occurred prior to September 21st, and if we look today, it's been shifted later. The spring Chinook spawning in the field appears to be moving later. And if we look at two other index reaches where we have data from these two time periods, areas where we have good densities of Chinook spawning, we see the same pattern, that there are many more fish spawning in early September in the 80s than we see today. So given the spatial overlap, given the temporal overlap between our spring Chinook and fall Chinook populations, it perhaps is not surprising that we have this weak genetic differentiation among the spawning areas. And that's what Sarah Brown presented this morning, is that that's what we see. She did show that there are genetic differences that are associated with geographic distance. The genetic data make sense in that respect. Fish that spawn further apart tend to be more different genetically. So there is some structure in the basin in an upstream, downstream situation. But she did not find, using the neutral markers, that there was any difference between the spring and fall run types, suggesting that these fish have a fair amount of genetic exchange between them when they return to the spawning grounds. That differs from the Greb-L marker that we'll be looking at in the future, which is not a neutral marker. It's a marker that's specifically related to a trait in the fish, which is the early migration timing. So there's more to be understood as we move forward about the population structure and the diversity of spring versus fall Chinook in the basin. So one of the real exciting things is that while we've been relying for 40 years on visual assignments in the field, we now have multiple tools where we can evaluate those field assignments. And in the case of the Chehalis, where there is so much challenge in that with the field assignments, these new tools may provide us a lot better insight into some of what's going on with the spring Chinook and Chinook salmon in the basin. So Andrew Claiborne this morning presented otolith microchemistry as a way to reveal the migration history, spring versus fall of the Chinook. And he identified that the visual assignment areas in the field were higher for spring than fall run spawners. And I would say that that was a small sample size. The otolith microchemistry, it was sort of an add-on to the otolith microchemistry study, but it was a result that pointed us to, we need to look at this further. We need to look at additional tools in terms of what they tell us about the status and the numbers of spring Chinook in the basin. So future work, which has also been mentioned this morning, is going to use this genetic marker that specifically identifies premature migration. So it should tell us, we hope, that whether or not the fish that we're visually assigning as a spring or fall Chinook salmon in the field has the genetic characteristic of a spring or fall Chinook salmon. Again, getting at that error rate, trying to figure out to what extent we may be overestimating the numbers of spawners for spring Chinook. So what do we know? We know that stream temperature affects the entire life cycle, both of the juvenile phase, downstream migration, as well as the metabolism and the survival of adults. We know that summer holding is a very vulnerable stage for spring Chinook salmon. And so from a conservation restoration perspective, protecting and restoring the existing cool water refugia, really, really important to this species. Deep pools with cover and cold water. The other aspect of the summer holding is limiting anthropogenic disturbances. So these fish are in small tributaries, in small holes. They have a lot of exposure to public access. Thinking about ways to educate and minimize the disturbance that they receive from rock dams, people swimming in the river, people taking fish out of the river, really important to the future of this species of the spring Chinook in the Chehalis River. And finally, population monitoring is challenging, and it's challenging because of the unique aspects of the Chinook salmon within this river. So spawning of spring and fall runs overlap in space and time, as I showed you, and this makes our traditional stock assessment based on visual identifications challenging. What we want to know is, are these additional tools going to support or challenge our current understanding of spring Chinook status? Do we have fewer of this run type than we previously thought? That's the question there. Big picture, we'd also like to know how this diversity is being maintained. So I think of it as, we have this diversity of run types. It's presumably been there for a long time. This is a warm basin. How is it being maintained? And most importantly, do we expect it to be maintained in the future? Or is there something about the current conditions that we should be concerned about? So wanted to thank a few people. Much of my understanding of spring Chinook in the Chehalis River has come from Kurt Holt, who has been working there for many years, as well as conversations and engagement with Larry Listell. Marty Leitke, Teresa Leitke, did all that radio telemetry work. I presented the genetic work you heard this morning, Sarah Brown and Todd Siemens. Lance Campbell and Andrew Claiborne have been working on the otolith microchemistry, and John Winkowski did the pit tagging and also the smolt trapping of the juvenile Chinook and has improved our understanding on the juvenile movement end. And with that, I'm happy to take any questions.
Yeah. Thank you.
So I'm going to answer you on the Skagit River, and then I'm going to ask Andrew to help me with the other. So in the Skagit River, spring Chinook have their own space and time area, and they have a higher proportion of yearling out-migrants than the fall and summer Chinook in the Skagit River. Let me just ask other coastal populations, do we see many yearlings in the returning scales?
We see a few, not a ton, but we haven't really looked either at otoliths in any of the coastal rivers, so I couldn't really tell you for sure. We do see some yearlings at places like the Ho and the Quileute, but not a ton, not like the Skagit.
Mm-hmm. If I could comment, so based on quite a bit of work in the Queets, very, very few yearlings in the Queets based on juvenile sampling as well as scale analysis, not otolith analysis, but scale analysis. So, this is a coast-wide pattern that you see here. Skagit, you know, has a lot of cold water, Suyadol, the Sauk, cold, really, really cold water areas, and that's why the Ho has a bit more. Queets is not that cold, really. I mean, it's cooler than Chehalis, but it's not. It's much warmer than like Seattle or the Sauk.
And those are the tributaries in the Skagit. We do see them. Yeah.
Do you know if the coastal populations have the same amount of overlap in spawn timing between springs and fall Chinook that we see in the Chehalis, or is that kind of unique to the Chehalis?
I think there is a fair amount. I think it's probably the most overlap within the Chehalis. But within Ho and Queets, and Larry probably provide more information there, but there is still spatial overlap between the two runs. Is that a fair statement?
It is. It, part of the, Mara, you made a comment right at the beginning and I thought it was a really, really good comment, and that is that it's our need to categorize fish. You know, this is a spring, this is a fall, this is a summer. You know, what are these fish? And a lot of that comes from fish management, because like in the Queets, and I think it's the same thing in Grays Harbor, so any fish that comes into the Queets prior to August 31st is called a spring summer. Any fish that comes in, I mean, the very same fish, it comes in the next day, and now suddenly it's a fall Chinook. So you see this, there really is a continuum in those rivers up the coast. And I think part of this is that how much of a continuum existed in the Chehalis historically, we don't really know. But that's why the Satsup is an interesting situation, because there is reason to think the Satsup, that's why they've been called summers. So that they come in like July, August, early September. So it is this categorization that we get into that causes this. So we have to keep that in mind.
Thank you, Mara.